5, Monday, House Committee on Education will come to order. And we have with us Representative Tom Butler, who will help us with a public hearing on House Bill 2443. Welcome, Representative Butler, and for the record, I would ask that you identify your name by name.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, there is a public hearing opened on House Bill 2443.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, your committee administrator will visit with you further relative to House Bill 2443, and I appreciate your taking my testimony as soon as we possibly could before we get, before I have to leave back the House Ways and Means or House Revenue. I'm State Representative Tom Butler from House District 60 in southeastern Oregon. Colleagues in House District 60, we've got some issues that arise from time to time, and that is the ability to find certified school bus drivers that are able to transport our youngsters around. These aren't full-size school buses normally. The school districts that we're talking about have less than 50 full-time students in them. And what House Bill 2443 does, as your committee administrator will let you know, is that in a school district where there are less than 50 average daily membership students, that we allow a member of the board who is in fact a member of the school board to be able to drive a school bus where there is a shortage of certified driver's licenses, a shortage of certified school bus drivers. Many times the parents that have to drive school bus are the same ones that are on the school board, same one that serves custodian and the other kinds of things. So the state law presently precludes the allowance of this to happen, and the folks from some of the small rural school districts have contacted me and have asked for special permission to get around this issue because the Government Standards and Practice Commission has some very punitive violations for folks that work on two or three different jobs at the schools and then assist as members of the school board. And so with that, I seek your help and support. There are a total of 17 small school districts throughout the state that this would help. Many of them, when you look at Druzy and Adel and Plush and Junter and A-Rock and Double O and South Harney and Pine Creek and Brothers and Suntex, many of those you'll find in House District 60. And if you come out to Double O, where I've got four students, or Ashwood, where there are four students, or A-Rock, where this originally came from, that you'll find that the parents just do everything they can to keep the school board operating, and would appreciate your consideration and positive recommendation with regard to House Bill 2443.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any questions for the good representative? Representative March, before you jet.
Thank you, Representative Butler, for explaining this. Would there be any existing provisions in state law that would prohibit such an individual from voting on, say, their own contract? In other words, they'd have to abstain from voting on a contract?
I'll leave that to committee administrator to confirm where we're at there, but the compensation of school bus drivers is already negotiated in most of these issues, and they're not really taking the full-time position as much as they are just assisting.
If I might address that question.
Representative Dolan.
There is a provision that if a school board member sees or is aware of a conflict, he or she would simply declare a conflict and then not vote on that issue. So the answer is yes. There are provisions for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming early. Are we going to do A-Rock or John Marshall?
I have her standing by the phone, so could we do A-Rock first, please?
We'll do the call from A-Rock first. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Farr, and welcome.
I already paid my dollar in advance.
I know. However, I had duly noted before you arrived that, oh, goody, we get
That's for public record.
Hello, Barbara. This is Jim Keller. And you're on the speakerphone now.
All right. This is Barbara K. Wood. I am the district clerk for A-Rock School District 81. And also on the extension is our head teacher, principal, and who is also our teacher here, Elizabeth Hassler.
Thank you, Barbara. This is Linda Flores, chair of the committee. So are you all going to be speaking today?
She may speak. Uh-huh.
Okay. Then when you change out, would you be sure, each one of you, please be sure to give your name for the record?
We surely will.
Thank you.
Are you there, Beth?
I'm here.
Okay. Do you have some testimony you'd like to provide us regarding House Bill 2443?
Well, this is because of the situation we have here. We have one school board member who was appointed to the position and then elected to the position, and he has for several years been our substitute school bus driver. And because Oregon law says we cannot pay a school bus a school board member, we have this little dilemma here. And we just want to make sure that we can use him in the capacity of substitute school bus driver. We know that this probably would have to have some restrictions, such as, you know, the law would say substitute driver only, and or limited number of days, and absolutely could not be hired as a full-time driver. And still serve in the capacity of the school board member.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Kaywood? Thank you. Did you have someone up there who would like to speak?
Beth, would you like to add anything?
This is Elizabeth Hassler, and I have nothing to add at this time, unless there are some questions for me.
Okay, Representative Butler just preceded you, so he gave us a rundown of the intent of the bill and the difficulty that you were facing there.
All right.
So we kind of got an overview.
This is Barbara. We are in a very remote area, and I'm sure, you know, he knows that.
Right.
And we just have a limited number of people here to do the various jobs that come up, and often we have to double up because of that, and some people are just not interested in being a certified school bus driver because the training is pretty intense, and most people do not want that added work or responsibility for that kind of a job. So we would appreciate any help that we could get from you folks.
Okay. Representative Dahlem has a question for you.
All right.
We have the House bill in front of us, and it says employee bus driver, and you're talking about a substitute bus driver.
Yes.
Substitute would make you whole and allow you to provide people.
I'm sorry?
If we made this substitute, it would still make you whole and allow you to find a driver.
Yes. We have two certified bus drivers currently on the regular routes, and so sometimes they're sick or have to take a day off for whatever reason, then we have to have a substitute driver. This person, who is a school board member, has always served as a substitute bus driver. He's never been, you know, on the payroll as a regular employee.
This is Linda Flores again, and a substitute bus driver has to go through all the training and requirements as any full-time bus driver.
Has to every 2 years, and they have to go through all their core training and everything that is required by pupil transportation.
Okay. Representative Roblin has a question for you.
Along kind of the same line that Representative Dahlem had, would it be a problem for you if a full-time bus driver could also be a board member?
Oh, no, that wouldn't be a problem for us at all. No.
Okay, Representative Farr has a question.
I apologize if this question has already been asked, but I noticed that the measure specifies if a school district is small, and I wondered if you could tell me the size of your school district.
We have a very small school district here. We cover a lot of territory. However, our school currently has 19 students enrolled.
Thank you.
And about that probably takes in about 35. There are about 35 ranches, homes that are in the area within this district. This is Elizabeth Hassler. Also, our school district is approximately, correct me if I'm wrong, Barbara, about 1,700 square miles.
Right. Wow.
That's correct.
And you just heard an official wow.
That's what we say sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Chair. How long are some of these kids on these buses?
How long are they?
Yeah, on the trips.
Well, our elementary school's school route is approximately 30 to 35 miles one way at this time. Sometimes it's longer when we have to extend the route to Burns Junction. That adds on another 13-plus miles, depending on how far past there they have to go. We don't do that right now, but that is a possibility coming up. So, and then our high school students that we bus are go to Jordan Valley, and that's 30 miles one way.
Thank you. Are we square with the staff there at AROC? Thank you very much, Ms. Kaywood and Ms. Hassler. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, we appreciate your help. Yes,
thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. It looks like we have John Marshall from the Oregon School Board Association.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association. And you have just spoken to the entire staff of the AROC School District. In case many of you probably have not been to AROC, first you start from here and go to Burns. And you head south east of Burns, a total of 114 miles. If you get to Rome, you're not there yet. If you go through Danner, you've gone through too far. That's about halfway between Rome and Danner. 30 miles southwest of Jordan Valley and 19 miles northeast of Burns Junction. I won't say it's in the middle of nowhere, but it's pretty close. The bill before you creates an exception. Oftentimes, we here in Salem work on laws and rules that generally apply to everybody. But I think what we have here is a very rare circumstance where you have a very small, a very isolated school district, and they, in most very small and very isolated school districts, the whole community sort of comes together to make sure the school operates well. And what we have here, as I understand it, is a bus driver whose husband just happens to serve on the school board. And oftentimes, if the bus driver's ill, the husband who serves on the school board drives the bus. I spoke to the head teacher, Kaywood, but the other woman. And she said that when they can't find somebody to drive a bus, she'll often, at the end of the school day, load kids in her car and take them home. I mean, that's just the way things are done. And so there was a rational reason, obviously, for creating a statute that prohibits employees of a school district from serving on the school board. And that has worked well, but this is obviously a circumstance where it hasn't worked very well. And the bill is written very narrowly to just to apply to this single school district, and there may be some other very small and very isolated school districts to which it may apply. But I think Representative Butler has laid out pretty well the situation, and that is we want to create an exception to work for a very small and a very isolated school district, and we think it's a good idea and are supportive of the measure. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Marshall, as I see it, in Section 1, Paren 3, Paren B, the district size is 50 or less, and Representative Butler indicated there were 17 school districts all under 50, and AROC 20, or at his list 20, they said 19. There's one other that's larger, Pinehurst, with 42. So, and then Black Butte at 32. The rest, there's go down to 5 and 6 and 4. Oh, my goodness, and 4 and 7. So it will apply to more than just one situation, it would appear, in the event they have those things come up. So I'm presuming you're just as supportive for all the other 16.
Madam Chair, I think the bill will fix a problem that's specific right now to AROC. I have not heard of any of these other extraordinarily small school districts where this issue would apply, but it may at some point arise. And a question was raised about conflict of interest, and obviously if an issue comes to the board where that issue affects the, I think the term is pecuniary interest of the board member or any member of the board member's immediate family, then they would have to declare a potential conflict of interest. And if it benefited directly a board member's family, then they would have to declare a conflict of interest and would be unable to vote. When it comes to, for example, if you're on the board and you have a spouse or a child, for example, that works in the school district, and the collective bargaining agreement comes to the board for ratification, there's what's called a class exemption. And because the collective bargaining agreement would affect the wages and benefits of more than just a single individual, that is a class of individuals, it's possible for a board member to vote on that particular measure. If an issue comes before the board which would, say, grant a contract to the spouse of a board member or the child of a board member, then obviously that's one where there's an actual conflict of interest, and the board member would have to claim that and then would be unable to vote because by that action it would create a conflict of interest. So there's really, you declare a potential conflict of interest and there's an actual conflict, you can't vote on it. But I talked to the folks in AROC, I mean, they're very aware of the conflict of interest issues and try to pay attention to those. So there are rules, and I think everybody tries to apply to the best they can.
Representative Roblin.
Chair, and question. In general, in these schools that are 50 or less students, there are, the school district usually has one or two people who are actually hired by the district as superintendents. And then any other people would be a school bus driver because they don't really have secretaries. They don't really have other kinds of personnel. So generally speaking, outside of the people who are actually running the school and with the kids, bus drivers are the only group. Isn't that true?
That's correct, Representative Roble. And in fact, in the AROC circumstance, they don't have a superintendent at all. They have a head teacher and then a deputy clerk that sort of handles the answering the phone and making sure the bills get paid. But this is a circumstance where these extraordinarily small and isolated school districts, the business functions are generally handled by the ESD just to make sure that they get their data turned in and that the money gets sent to where it's supposed to go.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I read the bill, is limit 50 or under. Why couldn't we make it 100? Because sometime later, you know, 50 is not big enough, and maybe come back again, we need another bill. So I think if it's the student less than 100, is that small enough? That's a very small community. John, can you comment on it?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, I think that the 50 was put in to account for the smallest of the small. There's a point at which a 100-student school district gets a little bit larger, and I think that's obviously in a larger community. And what we're doing is we're creating an exception to a statute that I think has worked well and is very sound rationale behind that statute. And I would be reluctant, frankly, to go too much beyond that because I wouldn't want to. I mean, this is a very unique circumstance where we're talking about an individual that happens to serve on the school board that might, on occasion, have to substitute in order to drive the school bus and get the kids to and from school. I'd hate to open it up too far for fear of creating other opportunities that may not be as sound of a reason for an exception as this one.
Thank you for your comment. Just my comment, Madam Chair. It could be a 50 and less, but technically if there's a 51, then they cannot do it. So I'm just trying to give you a little more leeway. I don't think this will be overused, but if it's 100, it could be for the future, that the population might grow and they don't have to come back. You know, 50 is too small, we need 100. That's the whole point I have. Mm-hmm. But as long as you think it's 50 is okay, it's okay with me, though.
Thank you, Representative March.
Thank you. John, there was some discussion about full-time versus substitute. Now, the bill just says as a school driver, and it does not include the substitute issue. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, again, Madam Chair, Representative March, I think that the bill was drawn for a particular circumstance. And it just so happens that in this circumstance, the individual that that they want to use that serves on the board happens to substitute. I can envision other, again, relating to very small and isolated circumstances where they can't find anybody else either to drive the school bus or serve on the school board. Many times these school districts require 5 or a 7-member board, and when you get into these isolated areas, it's oftentimes very, very difficult to find enough folks that are willing to serve on the school board. So obviously, if you wanted to amend this to say substitute, I don't think the proponents nor the folks in AROC would have any difficulty with that.
Thank you.
Representative Dolan.
If you look at the size of the 17 schools represented, the whole process is so much different than we're used to in a larger school. Schools this size are a family affair. And I would not want to make an all-inclusive statement. I first looked at that too, Representative Marsh, but then when the schools that I know of this size come to mind, these people work very hard, and if there's any question about it, they'll drive the bus for nothing or make lunch for nothing. I don't think we have a problem in any way when we look at the number 50. This is a family school. In fact, with only 50 kids in the community, it's hard not to be related to one another.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Chair. Along the same line, I think that I read that first part and was a little concerned, and then realized that you're only one illness or one accident away from having to use that substitute as the regular bus driver, and then you're in a problem all of a sudden. And people aren't coming to these small communities solely to look for the job to be a bus driver. And so you have to... You're out there developing bus drivers and getting people who are willing to go take the tests and go through the process. And I could certainly see some place not having a substitute at all and that be the only person. So I agree. I think it's the size here we're talking about is so small. And it is so much a family issue that I wouldn't want to limit it personally. And I think they are the only, as I was trying to get the question, I think they're about the only non-direct providers in the school system. And the rest of the people right there being the teacher, you wouldn't want them on the school board, but, you know, there's bus drivers.
Does that address your concern, Representative March?
Sure.
You yield. Okay.
Beat up on you.
Yeah, I was thinking it's probably the second best job in the area.
Madam Chair, as an aside, one of my travels around the state over the years, we visited the 00 school, and there were 4.5 students in this, again, very small, very isolated, 4.5 students, and the half was the kindergarten student. 2.5 of the students out of the 4.5 were children of the teacher, and there was a double-wide mobile home sitting next to the school that the school provided to the teacher to live. Just to get somebody to come out there and be an instructor to these students. And back during the early 90s, when we were engaged in the debate over mandatory school district unification, there were some of these very small, isolated elementary school districts out in Harney County. And the folks that came in to argue against being unified with, I mean, they didn't want to be have their fate decided by the city slickers in Burns or Crane. They suggested, if we don't have a school board out there, who's going to have the keys to the school? because these parents drive their kids into school, and each of the members of the board have a key to the school, so if they happen to be the first one there, they can open the door and turn on the heater. So it's a different world, and I think it's amazing if you think about our state and the isolated areas, and the fact that if you decide that that's where you want to live, and you have children, you call up your local school, and they will come. The school district will send a bus out to get your kids and bring them into school, or they will provide you mileage if they don't operate transportation. There's a way whereby they can pay you mileage to get your kids to school. And there are those that suggest, well, with these school districts ought to be unified. And the fact of the matter is, there's just such isolation, and they're so far away out of the, again, I don't want to say this, but I will, in the middle of nowhere, that there really aren't that many options. So it's a pretty amazing structure when you think about it. And that's the
anyway. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Vignette. Any further questions? Thank you, John. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2443. We will now move to open a public hearing on House Bill 2402. Mr. Keller, would you tell us what this bill does? Oh, we'll wait just a moment, perhaps. We'll stand at ease.
We could take them out of order and start appreciating
both
teachers.
Both of you.
No. Yeah, both, yeah.
Well, how rude.
It was a good suggestion, though. Thank you.
I'm going to take the rubber band off.
What? Busy over there.
A public hearing on House Bill 2402, and presenting to us today we have the Honorable John Lynn. Oh, please, Mr. Keller will brief us on what this House bill does.
House Bill 2402 establishes the Oregon Martial Arts Commission, appropriates funds for the biennium beginning July 1, 2005 out of the general fund, declares an emergency effective on passage. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
All right.
Am I on?
You are. Representative Lynn, you may proceed. For the record, please give us your name.
Okay. For the record, my name is John Lim, representative from District 50, which is Gresham area. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you very much for hearing this bill, very important bill, House Bill 2402. This 2402 will create the Martial Art Commission in our state. I think this could be the first in the nation. Already Canada has a commission on this martial art issue in that area. To me, martial art is very important. My understanding, many people consider that martial art create more violence. And as they see in the movie and plus many other that the publications is considered as a violence and creating more violence. But my understanding, it is not. I have a black belt of a fifth degree. How good is that, black belt?
Okay.
For the record, that looked like very good.
Okay. But I want you to know this is an honorary black belt. So it's not real stuff. My friend, who is the instructor of martial art, gave me as an honorary black belt, which I have and cherish very much. Madam Chair and members of the committee, we have a lot of problems in our society. Children having drug and alcohol, plus many physical teen pregnancies, and self-esteem, discipline, respecting the elderly, and we got a lot of problems in our society. I believe creating the commission of martial art will enhance the esteem, the children's self-esteem and discipline, and plus many others. And Mr. Hank Prom, who is the president of Northwest the Karate Federation, which is another form of martial art, he can testify better than I do. But I firmly believe in our society that we bring some respect and for the elderly and teachers and the parents, and then a self-esteem. It is a known fact many of our children, they have, including adults, we have an obesity problem. And this will not solve the whole problem, but this will help them. More physical exercise, and this will bring the good things to the student and to the parents and to the teachers. I will let my friend Hank Prom testify in this issue, and I will open up the question later if you have any more questions. Identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Hank Prom. I live here in Salem at 155 21st Street Northeast. I've been practicing martial arts since 1965 under a number of organizations and a number of different teachers. I've seen the high and I've seen the low. The main problem that you have with the martial arts is that it is a business nowadays. And as a business, it has at present there is nothing to say for any one of you to go and open up a school. You can order a black belt with all kinds of fancy Korean or Chinese or Japanese characters on it off the internet for $30 or $40, and open up a school and call yourself the Grand Poobah. There was a school like that down in Lebanon that I know of, where the person was totally unqualified. Mr. Lim, there are people who have an honorary degree, like Mr. Lim does, Representative Lim, who open up schools claiming to be fifth-degree black belts. And people do that all the time. I just was yesterday down in Eugene at the Asian Festival, and there's a panoply. If you look at the martial arts today, just here in Oregon, there is this incredible range of what constitutes a martial arts school. There are folks that are teaching gymnastics, jumping up and flipping around and landing in the splits, and whether they're qualified to teach gymnastics, I don't know, and neither does anybody else. There are people teaching a combat art, you know, something that would well equip a young person to go off and become a special forces officer or a Navy SEAL, and things in between, people doing meditation in motion and what have you. There are no standards. There is nothing to say if somebody opens up a school and invites your child to come and train with them that they aren't, that they don't have a criminal record. There's, so for these type of reasons, as a business, I think that there's a good reason for the government to take a look at regulating it. I don't really think it's appropriate to put it under the Boxing Commission, which is the alternative to Representative Lim's bill. But it is something that definitely needs to be done. all of the things that he said is absolutely true. You know, it helps children. It helps people. Folks, well, I have people who train with me who are working on working through PTSD problems. You know, people, you know, like one of my students is a retired prison guard, and he's working through the trauma of having spent 25 years keeping order at the prison, and he didn't realize till he retired how dangerous his job was. But for young people, we work with ADD, ADHD, you know, combination children, and it's a way of helping them work through their problems. But at the moment, anybody can set up shop, and there's nobody to gainsay it. You know, it's strictly the absolute free market, and quite frankly, there are schools that are marginally competent at teaching martial arts and marginally competent at handling children that are extremely good at marketing. And so they're big, successful schools. But if you go on, you know, for the real martial artists, you know, have funny names for them. That's like we talk about the American Take Your Dough Academy. You know, and some of certain other, you know, there's schools that don't have a lot of respect because there's not a lot of substance. A martial arts commission would be a first step towards setting those standards and talking about, you know, first thing is, do you have a criminal record? If so, you shouldn't be teaching children. Should the person be trained in basic first aid? Should they have a first aid certificate? Should they have certain things like this? And this is something that would be best done, I think, by the commission, the representatives advocating. Thank you.
Mr. Prohm, first off, I will just let you know that in your behalf, I'll be contributing $3 to our fund today because I did not announce in advance that we do not talk in acronyms here. But as you referred to the post-traumatic stress syndrome the attention deficit disorder and the attention deficit hyperactive disorder, I will, in your behalf, make that supplement. So thank you. Secondly,
my apologies.
No, you don't have to apologize. It was certainly my fault. No.
This is one more because there's one other you missed.
Oh, is there?
I wanted to know what it was, and that was the organization. There was an organization you mentioned.
I'm being libelous. I
probably American Take Your Dough.
American
Take Your Dough. No, I thought there was another organization.
Not the PTSD.
No. Oh, okay.
That was the post-traumatic stress.
Oh, so
I'm coming.
Okay, I'll take it back.
Take it back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Save it first.
So you are saying that these storefronts that do martial arts training for kids of all ages do not have any sort of regulatory framework?
None that I'm aware of. I know quite a few instructors in the state of Oregon. I've been active here for going on 10 years and gotten to know quite a number of people up and down the I-5 corridor. And nobody that I know of has ever been required either on a city or county level or state level to provide any bona fides or, you know, any evidence of qualifications.
Interesting. Any questions, Representative March?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Prohm, it sounds like what you're suggesting is an evolutionary process where we start out with the Martial Arts Commission. They establish some regulations. They establish some rules. Some of those are then codified. And then maybe the Martial Arts Commission evolves into the Martial Arts Regulatory Board, and people who teach jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, karate, et cetera, then have to get a license through the state. And so it sort of become a self-regulating, like we do for tax preparers or massage therapists or something like that. Is that how?
Yes, sir. That's what I would envision, is start off small, because there's going to be resistance. The people I've been talking to are, you know, they're very independent, and they're independent businessmen, and like me, I'm certified out of Japan. Okay, I went to Japan 4 years ago to, you know, to join an organization and to test, and then tested again 2 years ago when the international meeting was here down in Grants Pass. I'm going again in July to test for my master teacher's license. So I have a body that I have to report to. And so a lot of folks say, well, I have that body, and therefore that's good enough. Well, do you want to trust that I know what I'm doing based on the opinion of a guy in Japan? You know, who, you know, the Japanese have different standards than we have. They have different ideas about, you know, what constitutes right and wrong and appropriate behavior. So, and there are other people who, like I say, they're folks that set up shop and have no claim other than the fact that they know where to find a place to buy a black belt on the internet. So, yes, I would see it starting small. And be careful who you put in it. Make sure it's a very wide-ranging thing, because people in the various martial arts do have biases. And you don't want to have, you know, if you put all the Chinese guys in charge of it, it's going to look like, you know, it's going to be oriented towards Chinese martial arts. If you put all the Koreans in charge, it'll be Korean-centric. If you put all the Japanese in charge, or what have you, put in a wide mix of people and let them say, how do you keep your own house in order, and then let the thing evolve, like you say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Roblin, and then Representative Farr.
Thank you, Chair. Currently, there are a number of competitions that take place. Are those sanctioned by different groups right now?
There are as many different groups as there are teachers, just about. So there are lots of different organizations, and usually within each group there are competing their competing interests. In the Korean martial arts, you have the WTF and the ITF, I believe it is, and they, you know, and they're you know, juggling for position. And one controls access to the Olympics and one doesn't. And in Japanese karate, you've got the USA in the United States. The International Taekwondo Federation, the World Taekwondo Federation. I'm sorry. And in the Japanese arts, you have the United States National Karate Federation, and you have the AAU Karate, which happens to be run, and this is one thing where Oregon's very lucky. The executive director of the AAU karate program is Del Saito Hanshi, who lives in Grants Pass, and so he happens to be in my organization, he's very highly respected and a well thought of individual. But he's, you know, those are two different factions, and they're, you know, each group, and I'm sure the Chinese have a number. I'm not as familiar with the Chinese groups over here as I was when I lived in Hawaii. But, you know, there tend to be lots of different organizations, and each one has sponsors competitions. And then there are some folks who try and do open competitions and invite everybody, and those are more or less successful.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Chair Flores. What concerned me the most about what you said was the lack of, for lack of a better word, jurisdiction surrounding these schools, especially the fact that there are a lot of teachers who may have criminal records who are teaching martial arts to young children. Do you know of any instances in the past that have caused a problem and, you know, typically abuse charges?
Child abuse, you mean?
Right. Abusing either a child physically or sexually.
I know of one case where an accusation was made, and it ended up destroying the person. That was up in Tiger some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Hearsay has it that there's an instructor here in Salem who has a criminal record. I don't know whether that's true or not. So it's strictly hearsay, secondhand.
And currently someone who would have a martial arts studio and would be offering lessons to children at any age,
yes,
is not required to disclose that they have a previous or current criminal record.
As far as I understand, that's correct. Yes.
Thank you.
And see, as the representative mentioned, you know, we license massage therapists, we license tax preparers. These people are handling your children, and they have, you know, like I say, some of these guys are wonderful marketers. And, you know, there were people handing out things down in Eugene, substitute for daycare. Don't send your kids to daycare. Send them to martial arts class. well, who are these people? Now, see, aside from having an honest, no, not a fifth degree black belt that I had to test for, it wasn't honorary. I have a bachelor's degree in human development with a major in early childhood education. I have two assistants who come to all of my children's classes who are not currently, but both have been licensed teachers. So they have teaching degrees and they have been licensed teachers. They know, you know, so when we're working on, we plan our classes and we plan our activities. Everybody doesn't do that. Everybody, well, I was very lucky to find these people. But what do other people have? Say, this is where, you know, this is why Representative Linton is presenting this bill.
Exactly.
You know, to address some of these needs.
Mr. Palm, did you say that you are an instructor here in Salem?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you required by the City of Salem to obtain any type of license, city license or otherwise?
No, ma'am.
To do business?
I would, just, you know, just the usual, you know, business registration. You know, my business is registered. So, you know, and I know a lot of people are going to find this onerous. You know, nobody wants the government looking over your shoulder. But this type of thing, if, you know, the way this is presented, this is going to be the body itself. This is going to force the martial artists to talk to each other and to, you know, essentially clean their own house. And that's the best way to begin, and then it can evolve over time. You know, you can revisit this in the future. And, you know, the commission can become the regulatory agency if that's what you want.
Madam Chair.
Representative Clark.
I just have a slight follow-up to my original question. Isn't it true, because I have two sons and they've been interested, in fact, my oldest one still is involved in Thai boxing, but through the years when they were younger, of course, they took martial arts classes and I attended the classes with them. And I just, for the record, I just wanted you to tell me if this is still true. There were quite often older students, like teenage boys and even young men who were there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in thinking back to my original question, I realized that there could be some potential risk for children to be in those kinds of situations unless someone is taking responsibility for their safety. As you say, the owner of the studio, having someone who's asking him to be accountable for the safety of the children.
Yes. There's always, yes, when if you're mixing younger and older children, there's always a danger of that sort of thing. And it's always good to have adult supervision. I know that from personal experience, where we found out when one of my sons was young, the children that were playing, you know, the neighborhood children playing together, and it turns out there were inappropriate things going on that were very disturbing. And, you know, you don't think about them happening unless you're, you know, I mean, I know now, but at that time it was like, who would expect? So.
Any further questions, Representative Rowland?
I noticed that it goes to Ways and Means from here, but do we have any amount, any cost projections of how much it might cost?
Madam Chair and Representative Rowland, if you read the back page, line 5, nine, members of this commission who are not members of the Legislative Assembly are not entitled to compensation or payment for expenses incurred by them in the performance of the official duty. So there is no money involved in it at all. And I'm kind of surprised why it has been referred to the Ways and Means. They referred it without reading the bill.
Representative Lim, Section 3 does indicate that there is an amount set aside out of the, on the same page 2, Section 3, an amount from the general fund to be set aside in a amount not certain for the purpose of carrying out the provisions of creating the martial arts commission. So that's probably what that
could be. But the section is set up in case if they get donations or fees paid to them, then they cannot keep it. They gotta go to the into the separate account. That's the only reason that's in there.
Mm-hmm. Representative Marks?
Section 10 there, though, says the commission may employ an executive officer and other staff as may be necessary to carry it out. So I think that's probably why it needs to go to Ways and Means to kind of flesh that out.
I understand that. Thank you.
And also, was just pointed out to me as well, lines 12, 13, 14, all funds which are accepted are deposited to the general fund to the credit of the Oregon Martial Arts Commission and shall be dispersed. So that would create a revenue flow.
Okay. That's what she said. Yes.
Representative Barr?
Madam Chair, I wondered if Jim Keller could provide us with information that would show what a similar commission would actually cost the general fund. There are probably some others that would have a similar number of commission members and how much it costs to have someone serve as executor of that committee.
He's making diligent notes, and
thank
so I'm sure that we'll get some information forthcoming. Is there another, my question along with that would be, is there another entity of similar nature that is set up to take contributions? Representative March?
Yes, Madam Chair, to answer that question, most of the advocacy commissions are set up to receive grant and donation funds, and I see this is sort of envisioned as halfway between advocacy and maybe evolving later to be regulatory. But I did have a question: do either of you know of any other state that has such a regulatory body or a licensing body for martial arts?
No, sir. There was a move in New Jersey a few years ago because there was an egregiously bad system that was making an awful lot of money, very aggressive advertising, and people found a way to deal with the problem without creating a regulatory body. That's the only one that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Yes, we did some research and we couldn't find any other state has this kind of a commission. Maybe our state has to be a leader in the area. And when I talked to the Hank some time ago, how many that the schools or martial art installation in our state, he said, doesn't know, maybe 500. This is a big industry. Even we do not know how many out there. And with this commission, this is a good beginning, and then they might be able to introduce or recommend us a good policy. And so this is just a good first step, and this is not any government at all, just self-regulating for themselves, and we might be able to help them to go into the right direction.
The way you can tell if you have a really small community is if it doesn't have a Taekwondo school.
And also another aspect, Madam Chair, I'd like to emphasize, this will be a good economic development. We can bring statewide, national, worldwide, that the martial arts competition in our state. This is a big thing. Even Taekwondo is one item in the Olympics. How many years? About 10 years now, something like that. So this is, I consider this as one of the good economic developments in the future. And also this is going to be an even big industry. And that's the point I want to bring it in.
Japanese karate, for your information purposes, there's been a move underway. I think it's going to be a demonstration sport in the next Olympics. And just as an aside, one of my black belts is the fellow who's been developing the convention center. And I'm sure, you know, they were going to be talking about trying to put in some sort of a large tournament in the new convention center once it's up and running. So.
Exciting. Representative Roblin.
Thank you. Again, a comment more. Judo has also been in the Olympics for a while.
Yes.
And you know, we do have judo instruction and some of these other kind of taekwondo at many of our community colleges. Again, I'm not sure how they get their instructor or know that instructor is qualified.
Right.
So this might be helpful for that as well. because I don't know how they do that now. Have you, I guess that would be a question. Do you know how the community colleges?
I'm not really aware. I know that there are some people teaching in the schools, or teaching for the Parks Department, who are questionable. You know, I look at what they list as their credentials, and I go, you know. But that, you know, part of the problem with the martial arts is that there's some people who are really good teachers who are coming from a questionable background. There are other people who are really great fighters coming from rather questionable backgrounds. It's you know, you pretty much have to have experts looking closely at each case to determine what, you know, who's for real and who's not. And then again, the greatest fighter in the world might be a terrible teacher.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all the information you provided.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2402. And it looks like this is Representative Williams as well.
Yes, it is. Yep.
We'll open a public hearing on HCR 1, and Mr. Keller will advise us on this bill, and Representative Lim will present.
Thank you, ma'am. House Concurrent Resolution 1 designates the first Tuesday in April as Teacher Appreciation Day.
Thank you, Chair Flores and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Lim, State Representative from District 50. I come from the background from Korea that respecting teachers and elderly. And in Korea, we always had a day when I was young, a Teacher's Day. And through this Teacher's Day, we learned that the sacrifice teachers made for the society and for the student and for the school. And this is the day we honor the teachers and the respect, and the whole thing comes with it. And I thought this is the good way our state to show our respect to the teachers. As I study this issue, I come to understand that the Congress already, 1980, declared March 7, 1980, National Teachers Day for the year only. But that had never been continued. But the National Education Associations and its affiliates continued to observe Teachers' Day on the first Tuesday on March until 1985, when National Education Association and the National Parent Teachers Association, PTA, established Teachers Appreciation Week as the first full week of May. So, and also, October 5, 2004 has declared World Teachers' Day of the 100 different countries together. I believe that the first Tuesday of May, according to this bill, declare by the governor first the Teachers' Day in our state. Someone might ask questions. Already we have National Teachers' Day, Worldwide Teachers' Day. Why do we need another one in our state? I believe we need to have our own Teachers' Day to respect and to honor our own teachers. And so, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, for the record, my name is Bill Rogers, and I'm Representative Lim's Deputy Chief of Staff. On Friday, you had testimony by Dr. Burke. The representative and I had stopped him and asked him his opinion. He said that the best way to handle this would be to have something that coincided with the National Teachers Week. Since the week there's no specific day for teachers, the entire week is for teachers, where we could take one day out of that week, naming we may name Tuesday, would be for our teachers. And he thought that would be a fantastic idea and would be a great honor for all the teachers in our state.
And now is that during the month of March, April, or May? I'm confused.
Be May.
Yeah, according to this HR1, it's written April, but we want to that amend it as the first Tuesday of the full first week of May. Just one day. Yeah.
Makes me feel better.
Just the first Tuesday of the first full week.
Yes, first full week.
April 1st, yeah.
Yeah.
Considering our budget woes, I thought it was a dirty trick to play.
Okay, so as I understand you, you will be submitting an amendment to change this to the first Tuesday in May.
The first Tuesday in the first full week.
The first full week.
In the first full week of May, and you want it to be an annual event. So you'll be making those amendments?
Yes.
Okay.
And also the governor's declaration of the day as a statewide Teachers' Day.
The first Tuesday of the first full week in May, then henceforth and forevermore.
Exactly.
Okay. So we then, are there any questions of Mr. Lim or his assistant? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Then pending, I suppose, the amendments to this bill, we will close the public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 1, and I noticed that when I introduced that, I did say HCR, so now I owe $4.
Keep up the good work.
We fund it here first. Thank you, Representative Lim. Well,
that's our agenda, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. That would be our agenda. Are there any other announcements now? We do have a Wednesday meeting, and then Thursday, as I understand it, we're still scheduled to go to Wilson High School. Mm-hmm. And we're planning as if that will just be the case. You all are aware of Representative Crummel's mother having passed away. So, but I understand that we're still planning to go forward.
Is that Thursday meeting then substitute for Friday morning?
That is correct. Correcto mundo. So you can get away early.
So Linda, was that because his mother's memorial service is planned for Thursday? Or
No. Just not knowing. I think they were going to take her to Washington, her body back to Washington, and that may have contributed. But right now we're still in go phase. It is a joint meeting. Yep. So, with that, thank you, one and all, and our committee will be adjourned.
Thank you.